Welcome to the Pendulum Insight Podcast. This is a show for deal makers in the blockchain business, where we meet the players who are changing the game today and get their insight into everything from the red tape to the raise. This is your host, Colton Moffitt. Let's get started. Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. I'm here with Dr. Hubert Ritzdorf of Chain Security, the first automated formal audit platform for smart contracts. He's the CTO and one of the co-founders and the first employees. So just why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into blockchain research in general, and what's going on with Chain Security right now?
Yeah, thanks for having me, first of all. I got into blockchain research a long time ago in terms of blockchain research. I got into it early 2012. So that was when I was still a master's student at ETH Zurich, one of the most well-known European universities. And during that time, the research group was doing some research into Bitcoin and how double spending might happen and so on. And they needed some support, so I stepped in, and then that's the first time I really got close interaction with the blockchain and was super interested right from the beginning. And then afterwards, I started doing my PhD. Throughout my PhD, I always worked in the connecting space between blockchain, network security, cloud security, and so on. So I stayed around the topic, not necessarily only blockchain, but also around the topic. And then finally, pretty much 1 year ago, we released Securify. With we, I mean, at the time, there was no chain security yet. So where there was this came out of ICE Center. Mm-hmm. Which is a research institution at ETH Zurich. And so Securify is a tool to automatically detect certain vulnerabilities in smart contracts. You mm-hmm. can imagine it a little bit like a virus scanner for traditional programs.
Sure.
But it works for smart contracts. And one of the main motivations was this famous DAO hack, where lots and lots of money was stolen, depending on which conversion rate you use. But for example, Securify was able to find this vulnerability automatically. Yes. And as we were releasing this tool, people were saying, oh, this is super cool. Can you somehow do smart contract audits based on this tool? And we said, that might be interesting. But we can't really accept any money. We're a research institution. Mm-hmm. So they were like, why don't you just found a company and go ahead? And that's how what we did. And that's how we founded Chain Security a little over a year ago. Directly had customers, because the customers basically asked us to open up the company. Okay. And ever since then have been working in the space between blockchain research, a smart contract audits, a general blockchain security. So we are generally in that space, but I would say on the researchy side.
Mm-hmm. That's always good when your customers ask you to start a business.
Yes.
No theory there. And I guess you get plenty of the theory in the research. And that's something I wanted to ask you more about, was the problem that Chain Security is addressing. You know, it's a fairly technical one. You know, it's not very theoretical in a lot of ways. It's fairly real world, and that came out of research that we were doing at the ICE Center. Can you tell us more about ETH Zurich and the relationship that you and Chain Security have with that, and how your project Securify came from that research?
Yeah. So the main goal is to make smart contracts secure. Mm-hmm. And that sounds relatively easy. Like, but to do this automatically is actually pretty hard, because it's very hard to say there's definitely nothing that can go wrong here. That's a very hard statement to make. You can, even for the computer, because you can imagine it yourself. Let's say you have some complicated machine and you have to, which has lots of ways how you can manipulate it, and you have to make sure that no matter how you set all the little turns and so on, like nothing can go wrong. That's very hard. Like there's lots and lots of combinations. So that's basically how this works. So actually in the beginning it was a very researchy topic, but then it quickly got something very practical. Which is I think something that the iCenter at ETH has done very well, that it takes something fairly theoretical, which in this case is abstract static code analysis, and makes it something very real, very applicable. So the connection has been, we were all at the time, so all four co-founders at the time were working at ETH in different positions. And I was finishing my PhD there, for example. And then still today, we are very closely collaborating with iCenter, and we are super happy to have them, because I previously said SecureFi kind of works as a virus scanner. It can detect certain vulnerabilities, but it only can detect those that it understands and that we kind of taught it to look for. And if anyone comes up with a new vulnerability, SecureFi will not be able to find it, because it can only, like a virus scanner, you first have to tell it what you're looking for.
Right.
So we're developing new tools also that can look for general problems that are way more advanced. But this is actually a very hard research problem, how to build these tools, how to build them efficiently. Many people are trying to build these tools at the moment, and we are very happy to have iCenter that's collaborating with us to build those tools.
That's great. And those kinds of partnerships between research organizations, you know, universities and private companies, and we've seen that with some of the core technology that really drives how we all interact today. And I saw that SecureFi development was also funded by a grant from the Ethereum Foundation. So what was that like? What was it like to work with them?
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. We were super excited when this happened, because that was our goal with SecureFi, to provide, to give back to the community, to provide something to the community, a free service where everyone can scan their contracts. But obviously we have certain costs, like, I mean, we have a server running and we constantly keep it up to date. Like there's always new things happening. And we had so much more ideas how we could still improve it. I already said like SecureFi kind of grows as you teach it in more and more vulnerabilities to look for. Mm-hmm. And we had so much more ideas how to improve it. And then, but we never had the time, because as a small company, we didn't have that much buffer in terms of funding that we could just say, here's one engineer to just work on SecureFi for 1 year. Right. But now, thanks to the Ethereum Foundation, we have this freedom. We can really, we can push it to the next level, and we are super excited. This is what we love to do.
Awesome. Well, congratulations on that. And congratulations on the release of the full version to the public this summer. How has the development and usage evolved since that release? I imagine it continues to grow and improve.
It continues to grow, definitely. I mean, the usage has exploded, I would say. In particular, I think all the big contracts that are being run through SecureFi, either by the developers themselves or as soon as they're being published by one of the users or investors or something. I mean, we don't know who's pushing it through SecureFi. We're just seeing that it's happening. And also, I mean, there's been people who have scanned thousands of contracts. In total, we have scanned over 30,000 contracts now with SecureFi. There's been lots and lots of usage. We are very happy, of course, about that, because that's our goal, that as many people as possible can use it and that we can provide the service.
Yeah, it seems like an interesting tool to have available if you're conducting any kind of due diligence on a project, or whether yes. from the side of somebody who's going to develop a project with it of their own, or a partnership or investment. Do you see that that is one of the core use cases, is for due diligence, or is it people trying to secure their own projects? Do you have any insight into that?
I think we see mostly from the developer side at the moment, but given that the space is shifting, given that it's becoming more professional, I would say, mm-hmm. And due diligence becomes a bigger and bigger part of the whole space, it also moves increasingly towards due diligence, because we see now that tokens that want to be listed at exchanges have the hard requirement of having a security audit and all these kind of things. So we see more and more due diligence steps coming into play. So users being more and more aware of the security risks. Yeah. So it's definitely something that's started on the developer side, but it's pushing more and more to the due diligence side.
That's interesting. You know, it's good to hear that the developers are checking it out for themselves too. You know, that before money is coming to them and before it's people picking through it to decide whether or not to invest, they're actually security conscious. It says a lot about the community of developers, fortunately, that they are trying to be security conscious. And then, of course, it makes you wonder how many people are. Yeah, let's say from the perspective of someone who's got a bit of experience in information security and dealing with those guys, your researchers, your security researchers, is often a funny euphemism for, you know, people that are trying to break things. And maybe they're doing it for legitimate reasons, but I'd wonder if there is an adversarial element on there too.
I mean, there most likely is. To be honest, there most likely is. Yeah. But that's, as you already said, this is a common theme in information security. So almost every tool in information security can be used in a defensive and an offensive way. So, it's a long and historical discussion. But we always like to say that the bad guys anyway have the best tools. So we try to also build the best tools for the good guys.
Absolutely. You know, it's kind of it's flattering if the bad guys use it, right? In a way, it'll be good. okay. So, you know, that sort of, that brings me around to a question I had. I was poking around the services that you guys provide at Chain Security and then some of the projects you worked on. Can you tell me about Chain Code Scanner and how that fits into the mix?
Yeah. So, I mean, almost all of the things I talked about so far concern Ethereum. So the public, most widely used public blockchain for smart contracts. Mm-hmm. But there's many, many other blockchains out there. And we believe that in the future, there will be many still. Like, I don't think that there's going to be a convergence towards one. But just as there's many different databases nowadays, there's going to be many different blockchains in the future, because depending on your use case, you will have different requirements, and then a different blockchain will be the right one for you. So we have another tool which is comparable to Securify, but has a different goal, and that's called the Chain Code Scanner, and it works on Hyperledger Fabric. So Hyperledger Fabric is, or let's say the Hyperledger framework in general, is a framework with many important companies such as IBM and Intel that work towards private blockchains and having like a framework for these private blockchains. Mm-hmm. That they envision, for example, to be used in between banks, where you wouldn't want to use a public blockchain, but you want to use a private blockchain. And now one of these instantiations of Hyperledger is called Hyperledger Fabric, which is mostly being developed by IBM, coincidentally also here in Zurich. Mm. And the smart contracts running on Hyperledger Fabric are called Chain Code. So we developed a tool that can also analyze chain code, and it's called the Chain Code Scanner. Mm-hmm. And you can also check it out on our website. You can, it's the same as Securify. It's free to use. You can try it out, and you can contact us if you have more ideas how to improve it, if you want to use it in other ways and so on, then just contact us. And with Chain Code Scanner, as I said, the goal is a little bit different, because because we are talking about a private blockchain here, the threat model is a little bit different. The attacker is most likely going to be either an internal attacker, or the problems are going to result more from accidents than actual attacks. So we put a bigger emphasis on protecting against accidents than we do in SecureFi, because that's probably more going to be more of an issue in these private blockchains. Unfortunately, we don't know too much because, as the name suggests, they are private, so we don't get. The great thing about Ethereum is that everything is out in the open, so whenever something gets hacked, everyone can inspect how it worked, and we can write a new rule for SecureFi that's going to detect this hack the next time. With private blockchains, we can't do this knowledge accumulation. So that's what we see at the moment in terms of private blockchains, but as we learn more, we're going to expand further.
That does sound like quite a challenge, that to not have the ability for other people from the community to bring that in, and also data that's accumulated by other people from similar attacks or accidents. And I wanted to ask you about that without disclosing anything that would put anyone at risk, of course. I mean, what kind of accidents are we talking about? Like, what could go wrong?
Yes, a very good question. So, I mean, one of the main advantages of blockchains is that you can easily achieve consensus. So you want to achieve consensus between different parties. And the special thing about Hyperledger Fabric is that they reuse an already existing programming language, namely Go or Golang, which is a different approach than Ethereum has gone down, where they created a specific programming language just for their smart contract. So the fact that they're reusing an existing programming language is, of course, nice from the standpoint that a lot of people already know the programming language. A lot of development environments and so on already exist. That makes it relatively easy to get started. However, it has the problem that the programming language has a lot of subtle features that normally would be fine, but are not fine in blockchain use cases. So, for example, if you have any kinds of non-determinism, so non-determinism means it's not totally clear which way the program will go. So the easiest example is I pick a random number. So if somewhere in my program I pick a random number, then all the nodes in the network that will execute this program or the smart contract will pick a different random number, so they cannot reach any consensus. So this is the most obvious example. And if they don't reach any consensus, then they can't agree on what the right state is, and then the blockchain cannot proceed. So in a way, I blocked myself, like I destroyed my own progress. So this is the kind of accident that I was talking about. So the random number is kind of a more obvious example, but there's very subtle examples that are kind of hidden in the programming language itself and how you use it. And a chain code scanner protects you from these kind of subtle problems that you might not expect.
Okay. So somebody who's developing a private blockchain type of application, they're using this Hyperledger, and they could use chain code scanner almost as a way of detecting bugs. And they could use it to scan their project as they're developing it, so that they don't have surprise down the line. Okay. And when someone's doing that, I mean, so do you have to work in partnership with the private development teams of these companies, or is this something that you kind of do in a vacuum and then turn it over to them and then they say it's working, it's not working?
Yeah. So So typically we offer an on-premise solution to them because the whole use case of private blockchains is more often used for things that you don't want to share with too many people, and where you don't want to share the code with too many people. So then we offer an on-premise solution to them, where basically, for example, they would get a Docker container from us, which they can just install, and then they can use it during development, and they can let us know if they have any kind of issues. And try to describe the issues without, I mean, typically then they can't give us the code. They can't say, for this code, somehow something doesn't work.
Right.
But they can say us, like, can you also do this or can you fix this and so on. So then, we try to do that definitely.
Okay, so there's a little layer of translation there. We have to try to figure out how to get each other to solve each other's problems. I got you.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
So that is a pretty distinct challenge from an open source type of project where you have a lot of eyeballs on it. Which one would you say, I know it's hard, very subjective to say what's harder, but what's been more challenging? The initial project or this way of doing it is not open?
I think in a way the initial project is harder because you're solving a general research problem. Then what we're doing now is more like an organizational problem. Like we can't openly talk to each other.
Right.
But solving like a research problem still is the harder bit where you are like, how could we even do this? Like there's so many possible ways to do this. Multiple ways would probably work. They have different properties, they have different speed, different quality and so on. So that they're all a little bit different. So this research problem, this initial problem still to me is the harder one.
Okay. That's interesting insight. I mean, I can't quite wrap my head around the type of work that you guys are doing there because I don't have that strong of a technical background, but it sounds like it's fairly challenging. What do you see, challenging relative to other development projects that are out there, right? What do you see as being the number one thing that chain security is going to need to continue solving this problem in a way that, scales up the way that you want it to?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's mostly two things needed. First of all, there's still so many open challenges that are, as I just said, they're so hard to solve. Like it's you maybe know the direction where you have to go, but we're still pretty far away. So we still need iCenter, we still need research, we still need ETH to help us and to guide us in the right direction in terms of like how to solve these problems. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, something we obviously need is a great team. I mean, that's also something that's shared, I guess, by many businesses.
Right.
And especially by us as a small business, we are extremely dependent on our team and we're very fortunate to have some very smart people on our team. And obviously, as we continue to grow, we have to grow with this. We have to grow the team and make sure that we have the right people that can solve these kind of very hard challenges.
Yeah, it's a fairly niche skill set. And I see that you guys have developed some partnerships beyond the ones that you've got with the university there with other blockchain companies, whether they're doing technical development stuff or they're doing investment type stuff. Would you care to tell us more about those partnerships, how they came to be, and just kind of the sort of partnerships you'll be looking for in the future?
Yeah, so these partnerships, they are all, I guess, a little bit different. So I can take out a few to give sure. some examples.
Sure.
So to us, the most interesting partnerships are those with people who are building very interesting use cases on the blockchain itself.
Mm-hmm.
So, we see a lot of things going on. And so, for example, we have audited in the past a lot of ICO contracts, mm-hmm. which are very important because they handle a lot of money. So it's very important to get them right. But to us, the most interesting bit, because that's where our research really shines, because it's such a hard thing to check, are these actual use cases. So let's say, for example, there's a company called iExec, which offers a marketplace for computational resources on the blockchain. So let's say you have your computer at home and it's running overnight, but you don't really need it to be running. Mm-hmm. Then you can, through iExec, through the blockchain, sell your computational power to someone else who might need it, for example, to render a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a super interesting thing. And it involves a lot of things, including a marketplace, a reputation system, and so on and so on. So, and all of this is running on the blockchain. So that's to us, these projects are super interesting. So we try to look for these projects. So iExec in particular, came to be fairly randomly. So we got in contact by chance, more or less. Mm-hmm. And they had previously seen one of our presentations, and so they had heard of us. And then we came in contact a little bit by chance, and luckily at the right time when they were looking for an auditor. So then we were able to collaborate, and this was a super interesting project. So that's one good example, I think, to see how these deals go. And in general, we are seeing now that a lot of the people who did maybe an ICO last year are now releasing their systems, which they built with the funds that they raised in the ICO. Mm-hmm. And we are always super interested to review the systems. We're also seeing projects which are already further. They're already releasing maybe the second version of their system. And so on. So that by itself brings all kinds of new challenges, because you might have to stay backwards compatible. You might have to do some kind of migration. Right. So that's super interesting. And so these are the most interesting projects from our side, because they have the hardest challenges to solve. And if we see the hardest challenges in the space, that tells us where to guide our research and what kind of tools to develop for the future. Right. So these are the ones that are going to be super important to us in the future.
I see. Okay. So it's like they are signaling for you what is important, just like when your customers, would-be customers, ask you to start a business, yes. Taking those signals and listening. And as far as the challenging research that can come from those partnerships, it guides the core research in general that you're trying to do on those difficult problems. And exactly. I imagine it's probably good too to get access to people who are working on different problems. As your team grows, you might be able to, not that you'd pilfer anybody, you know, but you might grow your team.
Yeah, no, it's more actually that, unfortunately, as everyone knows, there's also kind of shady business going on, but if you connect with these people who are building the interesting stuff, often they can connect you with other people who are also like doing the real work, right? So you're kind of entering this network of the highly skilled technical people that where everyone can learn a lot from each other. So that's super beneficial.
Yeah, there's got to be a fairly limited pool of people who are working at the cutting edge from the technical aspect versus just trying to catch up watching YouTube tutorials, right? and that difference, finding those people when they're scattered all over the world, it certainly helps to have those partnerships, I'm sure.
Yes.
Okay. So based on, you know, everything you've told me, I'm curious if you have a piece of advice you'd give somebody if they're considering doing that sort of technical audit that you guys do, whether on their own using your tools or hiring a company like yours, and they're doing it for development, investment, or partnership due diligence, what is the main thing you would tell them to look out for?
So the main thing from my perspective is you got to have a clear specification of the system in mind. So no matter what you're looking at, if you're the investor, if you're the developer, you got to have a clear specification in mind. So what exactly should the system do? And what should it not do? Mm-hmm. So if you have this in mind, then you can use tools that are open source that are out there, or for example, like Securify, to figure out if what you expect holds or not. Because ultimately, that's our job, to figure out. People have some kind of thing in mind about what the smart contract should do. And our job is to figure out, does it actually do what it's supposed to do? And so if you have a clear specification, then this will guide the whole process. And if you don't have a clear specification and don't know how to derive one, then you're working with an auditor, you should make sure that he derives one, and you should demand to see it. Because that's also the problem with audits, right? Like, I mean, I can spend 1 year auditing your system and then say like everything was fine. and you have no idea if I did zero work or 1 year of work, right? Like you, it's very hard for you to differentiate, because maybe everything was fine or maybe nothing was fine, but I just didn't do any work. Right. So if there's a clear specification and it's clear what was checked, and what kind of properties need to hold, then it's a lot, the process becomes more transparent. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, it becomes actually better for both sides, because we also appreciate this as auditors, because these systems sometimes have properties that we are not aware of, right? Like, for example, sometimes the white paper forgets to mention a certain property. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, if we don't know about it, we can't check for it. And right. then maybe later it comes out like, oh, the system got hacked and chain security reviewed it. And then we have to say, yeah, we didn't know about the property, so we didn't know it could be broken. So mm-hmm. that's why we try to derive the specification to be sure that we know everything that's important. And then we can check all of it. And that's the advice I would give to everyone. Have the clear specification in mind.
Interesting. And certainly a challenge anytime you're trusting a third party to do something that you don't know how to do yourself, and you don't really know how to tell if they've done it right or not. And you have to take their word for it. And the whole point of hiring them was to basically...
But I mean, if they do it well, then at least you should be able to follow it, right? Like, for example... Let's take the ICO example. There's a couple of clear parameters in an ICO. For example, what should the final number of tokens be? Mm-hmm. How many tokens are for sale? How many tokens does the owner or whoever get as a bonus? What is the rate at which you can buy tokens? Is there, for example, a time window, or can you buy this indefinitely? And these parameters are fairly clear, right? Like, you can say this is a fairly clear specification where you can make a list of clear requirements, and then you can check those, right? Like, and if there's a mismatch between the white paper and the code, then you can say, oh, wait, something's weird is going on here. Like, the white paper says the owner is getting 20% of the tokens, but in some cases, the owner is getting 50% of the tokens. What's going on? That's not what the white paper says. So, right. It sounds very fancy, but in a way, it often breaks down to very concrete, fairly easily checkable properties.
Okay. And does development stop? Is that part of the agreement when you do an audit that they stop developing for that time?
Yeah, so they kind of have to freeze one version. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise we're working against a moving target, which right. is almost impossible to do. And then afterwards, after our audit, development continues, and they do all the things that they fix all the things we found. Mm-hmm. And then they come back to us for another review. So basically of the changes they made, because we see quite often that during fixing one bug, they introduce another bug. Mm-hmm. So then that's why we have another look at it. So this is kind of an iterative process. This can go on up to 3 or 4 times. Typically it's done after the first round of iteration, but it can go on for a couple more times.
Okay. And in terms of chronological time, I mean, how much time on average should a project expect to be audited?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So at the moment, a lot of the good auditing companies are completely booked out. Mm-hmm. So that clearly influences the timeline, because you might have to wait some initial period even to get the audit started.
Sure.
But once the audit starts, I would say a small to medium-sized project, the initial audit should take 1 to 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then obviously it scales with the size of the project. And then you should get these initial results, right? Then maybe it takes you a week to understand the results, fix all the things that they found. And then it should... So we have an agreement in most cases that for the simple project, that after they send us the updates, within roughly 48 hours or 72 hours, depending on the complexity of the updates, we will respond again. So let's say overall, the process should be 3 to 4 weeks for a small to medium-sized project.
Okay, good to know. That could certainly factor in whether it's someone who's planning on investing or it's the actual team themselves, to know that they're going to be having to behave a little differently for that time. Particularly if they're trying to manage their budget. So that brings to mind, you know, my next question, which is typically, if I'm talking to somebody who's on the deal making side, I'd ask the favorite deal story, you know, about a negotiation or leverage outcomes. If you have one of those, awesome. Or if you have something maybe about a hard problem you guys solve or some kind of, you know, glaring vulnerability you caught might have saved somebody a lot of hassle. Just your favorite story from chain security.
Yeah, I'll talk about a deal making story, which is a little bit of a long one. So
sure.
We had during my PhD, my time as a PhD student, I mean, writing academic papers, you go to academic conferences. Mm-hmm. And at one of the academic conferences in Vienna, I met Loi Lu, who was also a PhD student at the time. Mm-hmm. And now Loi Lu is the CEO of Kyber Network, one of the biggest blockchain projects out there.
Yeah.
Does lots of different things, very influential. Great guy also.
Yeah.
And we just basically more or less randomly met at this academic conference many years ago. And then we both popped up in blockchain startups. So, and then we already knew each other. There was a bit of a personal connection. And there was also some mutual trust going on, which is quite important, especially in this auditing business. Exactly as you already said, you have to trust someone to do the work for you and mm-hmm. to do it correctly. So we knew each other. There was some trust between us. And he has been probably our most important customer so far because he has done what I mentioned before. He has connected us to others. He has shown us new challenges that we have then followed up on. Like we have now developed a new monitoring product based on what kind of his requirements of his system are that doesn't only help you before you deploy your contract, but also helps you after you deploy your contract. Mm-hmm. And this fairly random connection that we made a long time ago at an academic conference had a big impact on chain security as a company now.
That's awesome. It's amazing how a lot of the time people don't remember that you have to have a relationship before you can really set up a partnership. And so some people are like, we need partnerships. Let's go find partners and let's contact them on LinkedIn. It's like, well, maybe get to know somebody first. So the way that you guys got to know each other, that necessary trust was in place. And that's really cool. Do you have any final words of wisdom for whoever's listening right now on the topic of blockchain security or research and development, collaboration, any of that?
Yeah, I mean, if you are listening and working on blockchain security at the moment, then congratulations. I mean, it's I find it to be super exciting at the moment. There's so much happening. It's so relevant. Like recently, there was a big hack again, lots of money stolen. Mm-hmm. It's still such an active field of research. So I think kind of I would imply multiple words of wisdom. So first of all, from the research side, mm-hmm. I think we have to realize that blockchain research, as always when there's a new technology, a lot of the work has already been done in other areas, in, let's say, database security, in general program analysis security and so on.
Yeah.
And we can reuse a lot of the findings. So we really need to look around cleverly. What has already been done? What can we apply here? Obviously, it cannot be applied one-to-one. Mm-hmm. But we can look around. I mean, it's this famous academic saying, standing on the shoulders of giants. So we can take what's already here. We can apply to blockchain research and then put more on top. Because at the moment, there's still a lot of space left. And on the development side, I think it is, on the development side, things are changing equally fast. All the development environments and so on are changing. And I'm also excited for that because as development gets easier and more standardized, we can push security further because at the moment, people are still struggling with development, which then makes it hard for them to write secure code.
Right.
So, I really encourage everyone to check out all the cool tools that are popping up everywhere. I'm fascinated every day, and I'm also having a very hard time keeping up with all the things that are going on.
It is amazing how fast it's all changing. And yeah, as much as you say, there's an element of not wanting to reinvent the wheel, and at the same time, an element of needing to keep up with what everyone's doing. And so it's fascinating work that you're doing. Greatly appreciate it. Where can anybody who's listening connect with you if they're interested in learning more about how Chain Security can help them or how they could potentially help you guys or the projects that are out there now?
Yeah, I think just come to our website, chainsecurity.com, where you also find our Medium articles, for example, where we explain in more detail how our audits work, how our analysis systems work, and so on. So I think that can be very helpful. And obviously, you also find more information on our services. Mm-hmm. You can also write us an email on to contact at Chain Security. You also find the email address on our website, obviously. So yeah, just come to our website. I think that will have all the relevant information.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, if you guys are listening and you have a technical mind and you want something to really go and chew on or play around with, or if you need to get some due diligence type of work done, or if you're about to put out a project and, you know, you're not so confident about the security, go take a look at their site, chainsecurity.com. Dr. Hubert Ritzdorf, everybody, thank you so much.
Thanks. Was my great pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Pendulum Insight Podcast. If you learned something today and you want to know more, go check out PendulumInsight.com.